And welcome into the Monday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you on this Monday morning. I am back from the land of the mouse, the land of 85-degree weather every day. It was 22 degrees and kind of frosty this morning at my house, Joe Rex Road. A little bit sad to be back, to be quite frank with you. How we doing? What's going on?
Good. Good to have you back. It sounds like it was an awesome trip.
It was.
And, yeah, it's actually – this would have been an okay week to leave, though, too.
It would have.
You should have made it a two-week trip.
It really would have.
Because it's going to be a fun week out there.
Yep.
In Nashville, Tennessee.
Could, you know, when we first got to Florida last week, I started to see some rumblings – on somehow I'm on like Nashville weather Twitter, like all these meteorologists both around the country and here in Nashville. It's just on my For You page for some reason.
Okay. You're a big weather guy.
Big weather guy. So like they started to come out with these models that had like 19 inches of snow for Nashville this week. And they're like, don't worry, this is probably wrong, but it may not be. And then now I think we've gotten down to just a few inches this week, but it could be doozy later this week in terms of the snow.
Yeah. I hadn't heard 19. Yikes. But yeah, it's enjoy the next couple of days, which are terrible weather on their own, but not like we're going to get, I guess, starting tomorrow night, right?
I guess so.
So, I mean, we can, like, if you have school-age kids, and first of all, you may be on vacation not listening to us right now anyway, but if you are listening and you have school-age kids, you can probably plan on, you know, having some activities Wednesday through Friday.
I would say that's probably the case.
Chores.
You know, we've had our one snow this year. I'm usually good with one. Once we start to get into two and three, I'm done with it at that point.
Well, the thing is, you know, we've had, I think some of the worst have just randomly happened in March.
Yeah.
Ice storm stuff, you know. I mean, I think this week should be it. Let's hope.
How was, did Kuharski behave himself? Keyser told me he was on his best behavior, so that's good to hear.
That's
Kuharski in
last
week.
That's interesting. What would you consider best behavior? It's an interesting analysis.
I mean, he did well. I mean, I don't think he crashed out very much.
Didn't yell at you all that much?
No, I don't really think so.
So he didn't stroke out, so good job, Kuharski.
I mean, exactly. People were clamoring more for him.
It's always positive.
Yeah. He was good. He has this take. I'm like, okay, so Robbie's gone, and now you're going to – he and I were screaming at each other about his fan gatekeeping. So, I mean, I was like, okay, well, you need to take that take to Robbie.
Okay.
The Packers and Heat fan. Because he's like, oh, if you're not born yet, then you can't. And then, of course, he's a, what is he, a Chelsea fan? Yeah,
because, yeah, he likes the soccer
over in England.
Right. Okay. You get to pick your soccer team. That's fine. But Ed from New Jersey got all mad. It was good. Yeah. But it was a good week. He and Stilly screamed at each other for a half hour, and I sort of kept control this time, better than I have in the past.
Nice. Way to go.
It's not an easy one.
It is not.
It's like being a daycare, man.
We got a lot to get into on the program today. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into all things Titans with him. As I typically do after I go on vacation for significant length of time. I have a Rob rant to get into at 7:45.
I would hope you get some. You spend a week down at some theme parks. I would hope there'd be some rants.
I've probably got a few that
produced from that
go through this week. But I've got one for sure coming up at 7:45. So we will do that. We begin with this weekend in sports, the NBA All-Star Game taking place. So hope everybody who enjoyed that. College basketball. How about Vanderbilt and Tennessee? It looked like Vanderbilt, Joe, was right on the path to pulling off the season sweep of Tennessee. And in the first half, they played really well. Tennessee could not defend for the life of them. It was 44-31 after one half of play. And then Tennessee turned it on in the second half. They end up winning 81-76 to get a win at home against Mark Byington and the Vanderbilt Commodores. What'd you make of that game? What'd you make of Vanderbilt's push to start the game and Tennessee's response in the second half?
Yeah, I tell you what, it was a real opportunity for Vanderbilt. I was very impressed. I bet last week Vanderbilt lost both games, you know, Auburn at home, at Tennessee, and I come away very impressed with them because they fought back against Auburn and they were right there against Tennessee. And look, that was Zakai Ziegler was kind of passive in the first half, you know, which, and even Rick Barnes said after the game, like, I think he said, you know, basically he's probably mad at me because I said stuff to him I normally don't say to him, but he completely dominated the second half. I mean, that's what he did. I think he had all 22 of his points. I think it was 22. You know, he ends up with like 22 and 8, all those points in the second half, and just changes the game. And tell you what, it was right there, though, right there all the way until the end. So big for Tennessee, you know, coming off the disappointing loss at Kentucky, because I thought they had a great chance to win that game. And we're not used to Tennessee being swept by Kentucky. I mean, I think I'm expecting Michelle Perry to call at any point to taunt.
Could happen.
Yeah, but for, you know, then I'm like, well, they're going to be ticked off and they're just going to tear up Vanderbilt, and it didn't happen that way, but big win for them. And right behind you, I'm watching highlights of Michaela Blake's.
Yeah.
But one of the great performances I've seen, seriously, for Vanderbilt.
55 points for her.
55 points, but they're down 15 with 6 minutes left. From there, she scores 30.
Yeah.
So she scores 19 the rest of regulation to get it to overtime. She gets – how many people – and you're like, in college basketball, men's or women's, someone fouled with less than a second left, down three, makes all three. I swear it's it's a free throw, but I feel like so often in that situation they don't make it. She didn't touch net on any of them. 55 freaking points. So the SEC scoring record is Michaela Blake's with 55. Number two, Michaela Blake's with 53. Division I freshman record, again, 55 and 53. It's insane.
It's pretty wild. Yeah, like, she's unbelievable. And, you know, she had the 53-point performance earlier this year. We talked about that, and I was like, 53 as a true freshman in college basketball is unbelievable.
In the SEC.
In the SEC. And now she's done it again and followed it up with 55. I mean, they have a special player over there. It's going to be really interesting to see how they're able to kind of build around her over the next few years here, but it is fun to watch Michaela Blake do her thing.
So you may not do this because you want all the NIL at Tennessee to go to the football team. Take some of that Diego Pavia NIL and keep Michaela Blake at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Start the campaign.
Yeah. Could be interesting in terms of the interest level in her this offseason. I would imagine it's pretty high.
But this is where, you know, the best college basketball teams, you know, I saw Pat Forty had a really good tweet. He's like, look at the best teams right now. He's talking about men's college basketball. It's like a lot of teams that have guys that have been there several years because they retain them, you know. And, I mean, I think Vanderbilt should be in good shape. If she likes the program, likes the coach, is going to a great school, you know. But, yeah, I mean – doesn't mean that, like, Geno isn't going to be DMing at some point, you know?
As we sit here today, how many on the men's side of things, how many SEC teams are getting in the tournament, do you think?
Well, I haven't gone through the bracket today. I had them at 13 last week, but Arkansas is close to the 14th. I think Georgia might be dropping. Like, 14 are possible. I'm going to guess it's going to be 12 or 13 because, I mean, Oklahoma and Georgia are both fading hard right now. Texas got a big win over Kentucky, so that's your bubble.
Well, I don't know if you've seen this, but I saw this stat pointed out last week. You know, the SEC is 500 since conference play began. I don't know if you've seen that.
Did you see that, Carl? We made fun of Carl Ravitch.
Did you?
That, yeah,
that's good.
Carl Ravitch. Well, you know, when he actually seriously took the Mark Pope played along with it. It was great. Mark Pope was at a press like, yeah, guys, it is kind of disappointing, isn't it, that we're only 500 since conference play began.
Been wow, just alternating wins and losses all around the conference.
Why is this is some great conference?
Jeez,
says who?
That's one of the all timers. I love that,
Carl Ravitch. People already, you know, college baseball fans. And by the way, college baseball has started.
It has.
College baseball fans get mad every year when Carl Ravitch comes in like College World Series because he's just been doing MLB, and then they're like, oh, great, he doesn't know even where these teams are from. But, man, this is a new low, Carl Ravitch.
The Four Nations Tournament in hockey going on. The United States has punched their ticket to the championship coming up on Thursday. So I have to say, like, my interest level in this as somebody who is all about hockey heading into the tournament was pretty limited just because, like, I love best-on-best hockey. I think it's awesome. The fact that the NHL and the NHLPA – got away from that for as long as they did, I think it's stupid, and I'm glad they found a way to get back into this. I'm more best on best like Olympic hockey when there's like actual big-time stakes involved. Having said that, I don't know that I've ever watched a better hockey game than U.S. and Canada on Saturday. Like the intensity level, the execution, it was phenomenal from start to finish. Maybe the best hockey game I've ever seen on Saturday night.
Better than the 2010 gold medal game?
I don't know that it was better in terms of the stakes of it, but the play, the level of execution, it was better.
Yeah. But that's the thing. And this is what we had an argument last week, too, on this. This was a best and a worst in sports. Best for Nick, worst for me.
Oh, nice.
Because I'm just like, this just pisses me off all over again that we've had to go through two Olympics without this happening.
I agree.
For the best stakes. So it was all this made – like, see, I can't just repeat what I complained about before, but I'm like, hearing David Poile talk about how, well, we just – these guys, who can't get them hurt and all this stuff. Okay, so – but this is okay. I mean, this is great, and I agree. I mean, like, this is compelling, and it's going to be fun this week. But also, it's like, okay, let's have this with everyone for the highest stakes.
Which
right?
we're going to.
Yeah. We're getting like, back to it.
And you know, I've heard some people say, wow, the NHL has fixed All-Star Weekend. Like, never do All-Star Weekend again and just do this every year. Like, I don't think you need to do this every year either because I think this it loses it if you do it every year. But, like, doing, like, a World Cup of Hockey or something like this every couple of years and making sure that your butt is at the Olympics every 4 years on best hockey is the way to go.
Yeah.
Like, this is how, like, the ratings are back from the game Saturday night. They're great. Like, it's the highest rated game that's not a Stanley Cup final in the NHL in a long time. So it's a great thing. Just keep it going. Get it back to Olympic hockey, best on best hockey. I loved every second of it on Saturday night. It was awesome.
Yeah, coming right out, the fist flying, man.
Had a toddler.
Those Kachucks, I tell you what.
Those Kachucks. You know, going back to a couple summers ago when we were talking about, like, what could the Predators do to land Matthew Tkachuk? That would have been nice.
Yeah.
Been good. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Speaking of the Four Nations tournament in hockey, a development at the goaltender position that does not bode well for the Predators' netminder. We'll get more into that coming up and what it means for UC Saros and his future here in Nashville. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Kelton on the text line says, I've only been watching hockey for about 10 years. I've been watching the Four Nations games, and it's crazy you don't see this type of play during the regular season. I've enjoyed all the games. Now, number one, I think it's hard to bring that intensity level 82 times. Like, when you have an 82-game season, it's hard to do that. And number two, you're talking about the best players, mostly, in the world right now that are out there playing. Now, I say that, you know, Dreisaitl's German. A lot of good Russian players that are not participating in this tournament. So it's not all the best players.
There's a pretty good Swiss player from around here.
There's a pretty good Swiss player around here as well. So not all the best players, but pretty darn high-level hockey.
Part of my complaint.
It's hard to replicate in the regular season.
Yeah. It's like Sam Bennett. Yeah, he's a scratch. You know. Yeah, this, you know. So you get the combination of that excellence. And then there's definitely a different vibe, though. But, again, that's why – I mean, two Olympics. We've missed out on this, and it still ticks me off. Like that, it's to me. I'm a huge Olympics person since a young age, and I really think that tournament is up there with the best that you can have in the Olympics. And of all the great things, if you love the Olympics, you know, the swimming, all of it. Like that hockey tournament with the pros is hard to beat, and it is. It's like a different energy.
Well, you brought up like 2010 U.S. Canada gold medal game, still one of the greatest sporting events I've ever watched.
Yeah,
like it was awesome. And even 2014 when they were in Sochi, like they didn't really have a game like that, but you know, TJ Oshie and the shootout against Russia, like it was awesome. Like it was compelling. Even though it was happening at 5 a.m. local time, it was
right.
compelling stuff. So we're getting back to it. I'm looking forward to that coming up in the next Winter Olympics here. Jussi Saros has gone to the bench for Team Finland, Joe. So he gets in the first game. It does not go well for Team Finland or Jussi Saros against Team USA. And Sweden and Finland played on Saturday in kind of the day game before the nightcap of U.S. and Canada. And Kevin Lankinen, the starting goaltender for Team Finland in that one, they pull off the win in overtime against Sweden, Mikael Granlund scoring the overtime winner. But Lankinen made a big save right before that in overtime, and Finland goes down the other way and they win. They're playing this week against Canada, and matter of fact, I think it's tonight. And Kevin Lankinen is going to be the starter. So Lankinen's starting against Canada, which means Jussi Saros remaining on the bench. So, Joe, it looks like that could be it for Jussi Saros in the Four Nations tournament. We'll see how it all plays out and what happens here. But Lankinen back in the starter's crease for Finland today. So maybe one and done for Saros in the Four Nations tournament. What do you make of that? And what do you make of just the way this is all playing out right now with Jussi Saros? His struggles in net this year for the Predators. And did not go well for him the other night against the United States as well.
Yeah, and it's obviously it's not enhanced. It's worsened by the fact that it's his former backup here. You know, I mean, it's just like it just. I think for Preds fans who are freaking out and panicking about him, like if it was some other Finnish backup, that would still not be the same as Kevin Lankinen, the guy who was clearly his backup last year. Not as good as him, obviously. A guy who, when they brought him in here, we were like, well, really? You can bring in Kevin Lankinen, be your backup goalie. Is that right? And then he was obviously very good. But it's a bad – I mean, the yelling actually among people at this station not involving me, which I very much appreciate, this is only going to intensify things because – you know, there's people who are going to say, well, you're just making too big deal. You know, he had a bad game. Lankinen got hot. You got to go with the hot hand. No big deal. And then some people are going to look at this like, that. How is this not confirmation that Saros is falling off a cliff? And, like how do you look at this and just brush this off? This is a problem.
Yeah, like it's – he's in a really interesting spot right now because, you know, I brought up – earlier, a few weeks ago, when we were having a discussion on him, some numbers that are not flattering to him in terms of goals saved above expected, and that's gone the other way. Now, again, as I said at the time, you know, the goal save expected stat is above expected is not perfect. It does a good job. I don't know if it does, like, you know, an elite job of explaining what's going on out there because, you know, quality shot for somebody may not be a quality shot for somebody else. Depending on which website you look at, it's different. Like, there's a pretty dramatic difference right now between, like, what Hockey Reference has and what, like, Sport Logic has in terms of how they view it. So, it's not a perfect stat. But the numbers are what they are with Jussi Saros. Like, it's not good right now. I brought up, you know, the Andrei Vasilevskiy example of sometimes goalies just have an off year, right? Like, Vasilevskiy, we all know, is one of the best goaltenders of his era. He's going to be a Hall of Famer one day. And last year at the age of 29, he's bad. Like, he had a .900 save percentage. His goal saved above expected went the other way. And Tampa Bay squeaked into the playoffs. They were one and done. He just didn't play well. Well, this year he's rebounded. Like, he's got a .918 save percentage. He's played really well. You know, they've got some other problems right now, but he generally speaking, has not been an issue for them this year. So sometimes goaltenders just have bad years and they're able to rebound, and maybe that's what Jussi Saros can do. The concerning part to me is it kind of feels like this is now 2 years of it, and I know, you know, people focus so much on the way things ended last year for the Predators, right? Like, they played really well down the stretch, they made the playoffs, his numbers were a lot better in the second half of the year, which is great, but they're getting ready to pay him to be, and they're not paying him a ton of money, but they're paying him a lot of money to be an elite goaltender. You're not paying him to be bad for half the year, which is what he's been for the last 2 years. He has been an average to below average goalie by the numbers the last 2 years for significant stretches of the season. That is a problem moving forward here. They've got to find a way to get that figured out. Otherwise, it's just like if this is what you're going to get out of him, then you just don't give yourself much of a chance moving forward here.
So are you saying that you're on Team Stilly and try to trade him before the deal kicks in?
Well, I would have traded him last offseason.
Right.
The offseason before that. I mean, if you can do it, then I'd probably look at it, but I don't think you're going to be able to do that. Like, let me ask you this. Who's taking him right now? Like, looking at he's about to be 30 years old in April. The numbers are going the wrong way, and he has an 8-year deal that hasn't kicked in yet. I'm not saying that nobody would even consider it. Maybe somebody would. But I don't think that there's a whole lot of teams right now that would be like, yep, UC Soros for 8 years. Sign me up.
Remind me, too, his no trade clause situation.
I believe it's full no trade for the first 6, if memory serves me correctly.
Yeah. So, you know, again, with these things, if there's another sit, it doesn't mean that you can't waive it as a player. But, yeah, it's hard for me to – I mean, like a great team that is great other than at goalie, like that's the team you think of. But, again, why does that team think that he's the answer?
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't think that anybody would – to me, it's you just riding it out. Like you said, you're hoping that – at least last year there was a long stretch where he was more like
himself.
Where
he looked like himself, yeah.
You're hoping that this year is, yeah, I mean, the Vasilevskiy year, that gives you hope for sure. Or I don't know if it gives you hope, but at least there's a recent example of, you know, it is possible to not just continue on a downward trend.
Well, and this, you know, this is also a situation where, you know, as we tend to go to a lot on this show, multiple things can be true at the same time. Like, there's been a lot of arguing that I've seen over the last couple of weeks on social media about, like, well, whose fault is it really? Like, is it UC Soros' fault? Is it the Predators being bad in front of him? Like, what? How do you divvy up that blame? I think it's both, right? Like, the Predators have been terrible defensively by the numbers this year. They've been terrible offensively by the numbers this year, which, by the way, when you add all that up, is how you get to be 30th in the league, right? Like, that's why you are where you are in the standings. But, like, I feel like too often there's just a brushing over the goaltending position. We've talked about that. Like, well, it can't be the goalie's fault. Like, it can't be the goalie's fault. It's like,
right,
well,
of course.
Sometimes it is the goalie's fault. I'm not saying it's exclusively the goalie's fault, but he is not helping things right now. And you're paying him to be the eraser, to be the elevator, the force multiplier, if you will.
Yeah. Goal saved above expected isn't perfect, but, again, you compare it to what you're seeing from him and compare the numbers before and now, it's not that far off. And that is, of course, a stat that's supposed to take away the whatever's going on in front of a goal. It doesn't completely, but it to some extent it does.
Well, in that position, more so than I think a lot of other positions in sports, a lot of confidence is required to play that position. And I do wonder, like, right now, where is he at confidence-wise on that? Like, it has to have taken a hit with the way that he's played this year. I can tell you that he was really looking forward to this tournament and really looking forward to maybe being able to show people what he's still got in this tournament. And, you know, you're talking about potentially just being one and done with a poor showing. I wonder where the confidence is at right now.
Yeah, this could end up being obviously a bad thing for him that he was in this at all.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on UC Soros, your concern level for him moving forward. We're going to get into the AFC South picture a little bit later this hour as well. Take more of your thoughts on all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone to text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joey from Bellevue saying, Soros getting benched. Forsberg, Nyquist with no points in 2 games. Not a good showing from the local guys. JC from Gulletsville says, when Soros is not on his A game, his lack of size is magnified. You know, we've talked about that too. You know, going back even to the Soros versus Askarov debate, right? Of, all right, Askarov got prototypical goaltender size that you're looking for, the athleticism, all that, and not to revisit that trade because it's done at this point. But one of the things we did talk about with Soros was he's been so heavily reliant on his athleticism and his quickness and going side to side, being able to be efficient with his movement. Does that go quicker when you play that way, particularly as much as he's played over the last few years? And when that happens, how much do you get exposed when you are a smaller goaltender? Is that what we're seeing right now? Like, look, I'll be frank with you. I'm not smart enough to really know that. Like, you know, it's funny, the goaltending position in some ways, like when you ask coaches about it around the league, is kind of similar to like the kicker. Like in the NFL, when you ask about the kick, they're like, yeah, man, they just need to make the kick. I don't know what to say. Like, you ask, go ask John Tortorella about the goal, and he's like, I mean, stop the puck. Like, that's what I teach him to do. So I there's a lot that goes into it. They've got a new goaltending department with Mitch Korn leading the way. Ben Vanderklok's a demonstrated very good goaltending coach. So, like, they have good people working with their goaltenders. But, like, if that's what it is, and Saros has just lost some of that athleticism and isn't as quick as he used to be, and it's starting to go on him, I don't really know how you overcome that when you don't have the size. Like, Pekka had the size. He was 6'5". So maybe when the athleticism started to go a little bit, you still had the size to fall back on, and you just don't have that with Saros.
Yeah. No, I think it has to be concerning, because you have to be super explosive, twitchy, quick, and not that you can't be those things into your 30s, but can you be those things at the same level? I feel like if there's a real fix, it's probably making a stated effort of like, this guy is playing like, you know, 52 games or whatever. Like, I think you have to be really strong at backup goaltender, and you have to split it a little bit and hope that that helps him some. Like, Jason Goodlowsville's like, Yossi with a bad year, Lozon injured, Stas MIA, three rookies, top line doesn't have two-way players, and that's all fine. Again, it, you know, of course it's not as simple as just, you know, you can't just isolate it. It's not that simple.
Right.
But, you know, all those things aside, you know, I mean, there's too much evidence to tell us that, you know, that he's just having a really bad year.
Well, again, he's supposed to be the elevator, right? Like, you're paying him to elevate your team, which, by the way, we've seen him do time and time again. Like, we've seen him, you know, when he was at the top of his game, that's what he did, right? Like, he is either single-handedly kind of drugged them to the playoffs or gotten them really close. Like, you know, I think maybe the best I've ever seen him play was a couple of years ago when they sold everybody off, and he was just unbelievable down the stretch. Like, it was crazy.
Which, by the way, with all these, who the heck is in front of me right now, even?
Like, it didn't matter. Like, he just was outstanding. And he's not that right now. Like, we can window dress it all you want. Like, since he has become a full-time NHL starter, this is the worst he's been. So the question you've got to ask if you're Trotz, if you're Brunette, if you're Predators decision makers right now is, how much of this is just a down year for him, a down year for everybody, and how much of this is signs that it's going the other way with some of these guys? Look, I can't tell you that I'm 100% confident that that's what this is, that it is going the other way. Because, like, logically, I look at it and I say, yeah, I realize Saros has played a lot of hockey. They've worn him into the ground a lot over the last few years. But he is only 29 years old. Like, you expect this later when you're 33, 34, 35 for this to start to happen. And that's why, you know, when you signed the 8-year deal, I think everybody knew when he signed the deal that, you know, last two, three years could be rough on that thing. But you live with that with what you get on the front end. So I'm not totally convinced that this is just what he is and he's never going to recover from it. But I also am not going to sit here and ignore the reality of what the numbers are telling us right now. And the numbers are telling us that I think if you're not at least concerned about that, then you're not paying attention to what's going on right now.
Or you're just resolved to make excuses.
Right.
So let's say, what if Saros played his best? Was at peak Saros this year? Would this team be in any kind of different situation?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think they'd be better. The problem is, this is where you get into like two things being true, right? Like, Saros has been bad, but their defense is horrible, and they can't score. Like, they're just a bad team Like, they're a bad hockey team right now. So,
like, could he have been the difference in making them from bad to at least, like, on the fringe?
Well, maybe, but, like, to start the season, he was pretty good. Like, the numbers to start the year for him were pretty good, and yet they still weren't winning because he was getting the worst goal support in the league. So, how much different would it be? I don't know. Like, I think they've got so many problems right now that it's hard to really determine that. But, again, you're paying him to be kind of that force multiplier. And, look, you know, when you're scoring one goal a game, two goals a game, and it doesn't really matter what you're doing in goal, like, you're going to lose. Like, it's just the league's too good now, and you've got too much offense in this league right now where I don't care how good your goalie is, if you can't score more than two a game, then you're just not going to win. Like, that's what it is in today's NHL. Problem is right now, like, you've got all of those things going wrong. And it makes it – it goes back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago. It makes it really difficult to determine how close you are to actually getting out of this. Like, are you – is this just everything that could possibly have gone wrong for them this year has gone wrong? Or is this just what they are? And that's with the goalie. That's with the forward group. You know, defense, I think, is a little bit different because they've gotten younger there and they're kind of switching some pieces around. But fundamentally, I think that's where they're at with this franchise right now.
Yeah. And the reality is that whatever they're going to be in the future, it's largely dependent on him, this being an aberration for him.
And if it's forward group, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, if you just isolate him, I mean, if it's not an aberration, man, I mean, that's a tough thing to get around, you know?
Yeah.
It is. It's a tough obstacle to overcome in years to come. Which, yeah, not to do the not to be like others, but we did tell you so. we did say move on from him. Like Ryan in Nashville's like a lot of people said that. I thought it was, I don't know, probably close to a 50-50 yeah. debate, it felt like, with the fan base, right?
Well, on again,
Saros, like, or, you know, Scar.
Yes, and we did say that. I will again say, like, I think it's still too early in my book just to, like, totally judge the 8-year contract right now before it kicks in. But I think you got to be pretty concerned about where things are headed right now. And this is one thing I talked about at the time. Like, to me, it's one thing to give out an 8-year contract when somebody's 26 or 27. When you're giving out an 8-year contract when somebody's 30, you got to be real careful with those.
That's yeah. That and a lot of other things are, frankly, like, you are winning big right now. You're winning big right now. You're winning big next year, the year after that.
Yep.
And then, you know, there may be pain, but it's worth it because you're winning big, right?
Yeah. Could there be some surprise moves coming in the AFC South this offseason? We'll get into that coming up next. Take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Joe, taking a look at the AFC South, the NFL offseason about to start rolling here. The tag window opening up later this week in the NFL. Here in the next week and a half, we've got the NFL Combine, of which Joe Rexroad, very excited, and I'm still holding out hope that he could attend the NFL Combine this year. We'll see how things go.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
And then after that, it's free agency, baby. So we're getting there. The NFL offseason is slowly but surely making its way along here. And I got to thinking, just kind of looking around the division. You know, everybody's focusing on the Titans right now at the number one overall pick and what they're going to do with quarterback. We know that there's going to be some quarterback movement with the Titans this offseason, one way or the other. They're either going to bring in some free agents or go draft a quarterback. We know that the Titans are addressing that position. I do look at the rest of the AFC South outside of Houston and wonder, like, could we see something surprising at that position this offseason? Now, there's all this noise over the last, like, week and a half about, like, Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, and Jacksonville has largely kind of shut that down of, like, we're not trading Trevor Lawrence. So I guess you could throw him into this if you want to. The really interesting one to me, Joe, is, like, what happens with Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis? because you've got Chris Ballard somehow coming back for, I believe, his – will this be his 10th year or his 9th year?
He's real close to a decade.
I think this is his 10th year as general manager of the Colts. You got Steichen remaining in place, and you've got Anthony Richardson, who has been extremely underwhelming in his first 2 years. Now, his first year, a lot of it was washed by injury, and he barely played. This past year, he played 11 games. He completed 47.7% of his passes, 8 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Wasn't good from Anthony Richardson, to the point where he got benched at one point this year for a couple of games, and then they put him back in once they determined that they were tired of watching Joe Flacco play football at that position. So you have, I think, pretty clearly, at least I think, maybe not, I think a coach that's probably on the hot seat heading into next year, and I guess the GM maybe or may not be on the hot seat according to the fact that he's not been fired yet, so we'll see what happens on that front. But I can't imagine that there's a ton of confidence on the Anthony Richardson part of this right now. So on one hand, Joe, you drafted him 4th overall. He's barely played football. He is only 22 years old, and he's entering into his 3rd year. I think you still want to see what's left on that bone. But like, you also, like, if you're the Colts, you need to win. And I just don't know if I see a path right now to them winning a whole lot of football games with Anthony Richardson at quarterback. Ballard has talked about how, like, they probably need to ramp up the level of competition at that position. So we'll see what that looks like. But could Indianapolis be in play to bring in a veteran quarterback? Do you think that we could see a surprise move from them this offseason at that position?
I guess. But honestly, like, Chris Ballard at this point should just have a press conference and say, guys, either Anthony Richardson becomes great this year or fire me. Like, there's like any other, I think, any other franchise in this league. I mean, we complain here all the time about the owner firing everybody all the time.
Yeah.
I can't even, it's hard for me to imagine. Like, when they drafted Anthony Richardson, it was like everybody kind of agree. Okay, well, this is it. This is your tenure. You got the bad luck with Andrew Luck. Pun not intended, but it worked out, I guess. And then you tried to band-aid it with veterans while having a really good team.
Yep.
You did build a good team, and the quarterback plan of veteran, veteran, veteran kept not working. That's another, by the way, the Colts are a decent example as we talk about the Titans and veterans. Of course, the Titans don't have a good team to go with one either. So, but like, if he seriously is like, yeah, let's go with a veteran. Like, how could you? I'm sorry. How could you, if you're Robert Irsay, not fire him on the spot? Like, this is it. Your entire tenure is tied to this kid. So maybe in year 3, I mean, he is 22. He has played very little. There is talent there for sure. It's got to be the whole thing. And then to me, what makes sense of the Colts, if the owner did things that made sense, is that you fire both. You fire the whole thing, and you have a totally new timeline with a GM and a coach and a quarterback. I mean, that's how Irsay should be looking at it,
yeah.
But I have no idea how he actually is.
Well, the other part of this is, like, it's such an interesting time for quarterbacks right now in this league because we're in an era where you're seeing teams move on from highly drafted quarterbacks quicker than they ever have. Now, I thought we were seeing that this year with the Colts and with the Panthers, right? Like, Richardson got benched, and Bryce Young got benched. Now, Bryce Young came back in as the year went on and played better, to the point where I think they feel pretty good about Bryce Young heading into next year.
Better.
Richardson came back in, and he had some moments. Like, he looked okay against the Titans. So did everybody else in the league. But I think he completed, like 7 passes in that game? You heard him in the running game a little bit. But there was never really that wow performance from Anthony Richardson this year on any sort of consistent basis. He made some throws every now and then where you're like, wow, I mean, look at the arm talent he's got. But by and large, it was a lot of bad from him. So in a time where teams are giving up on the quarterback that they draft highly, right, quicker than they ever have before, how do they view that in Indianapolis? I don't know what the answer is. Like, I can't imagine there's a long leash for him heading into next year. Like, you're going to give him the whole year to figure it out? Like, if he struggles the way that he struggled for half the year next year, he's probably done. Like, he's probably out in Indianapolis at that point.
Yeah, you would think. I think Anthony Richardson, you know, more than some quarterbacks who get discarded, will be of high interest to people in terms of, okay, and now you go, you're a backup, keep working on your game. Like, someone's going to be interested in, like, still him as a developmental project, I think. Again, I'm listening to Stilley tell us that, like, Mac Jones should be the Titans quarterback, you know. So, like, it happens. These guys are out there. Levis will be somewhere. Pickett just won a ring. Congratulations, Kenny Pickett. Put that little tiny ring on those baby hands and enjoy your offseason. So that'll happen. But, yeah, I would think in Indy, it's probably the whole bunch of them. I know Indy Ben weighed in last week on Titan stuff, and I was like, tell me how – there you go. We got Indy Ben. Indy Ben is actually weighing on a Colts topic. I'm actually shocked. Okay, he has a chance to be a good starting quarterback considering he's only 22-23. The Colts fans aren't expecting a big jump, but he's given the chance to prove he's a guy. It's a long text. He said his biggest concern with Anthony Richardson has always been health and availability more than anything else. So, Indy, not playing well at quarterback? That's not a concern?
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned with his health too. But, like, I also think the way that he's going to have to play right now to be effective in the NFL, like, if you don't lean into him as a runner, then I don't think right now he's good enough throwing the ball to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. Look, I love the ability. Like, you know, I talked about it. He made a throw early in the year. I want to say it was against, I don't know, maybe Chicago or somebody. But it was, you know, it was a laser, 60 yards in the air, right over the shoulder. It was a beautiful throw. And you're like, yep, I can see it. That's why you take him where you take him. But, you know, I watched him play in Green Bay. It was bad, that game. You know, I watched him play against the Titans. He's okay. But, like, you know, Jonathan Taylor ran for a billion yards in that game, so he didn't have to do a whole lot. I mean, 47.7% a completion percentage in today's NFL, like, you almost have to try to be that bad and that inaccurate with the ball.
Yes. No, it's and I just don't know. I don't know where that's going, but it's not good. And Indy Ben, first of all, Levis is 25, not 26, and who cares? First of all, comparing to Levis, that's fine. But Levis started 2 years, and then and Anthony Richardson started one. There's a year difference between them in experience. Is that an important year? Yes. But, again, year three in this league, the way things go, you can't really ask for much more than this year. And like you said, it may not be this whole year.
Yep. And on the Trevor Lawrence front, by the way, there's a report that went out there that the Steelers had approached the Jags.
Oh, we flipped out about it.
Oh,
it actually happened during the program.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
it was very, very exciting.
The Jags have since shut that down, according to ESPN.
So yeah.
They said there's no chance, and it's ridiculous, that they would consider trading Trevor Lawrence. So there you go.
Yeah, this guy, I forget his name, who did this, he's like a Big Ten Network guy, but he said, I got it straight from the Jags. I'd love to know who in the Jags told you that. Someone who hates you, probably.
Urban hanging around. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Which team is most likely to pull off a trade for the Titans at number one overall? I've got the numbers. We'll get into that. Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.